When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on the show, we have Marcus Ubungan. Hi, Marcus.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are so pumped to talk to you. Love your large format work. Mm-hmm. But before we get into it all, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners and kind of give us a background on how you got into photography?
Sure. So my name is Marcus Ubungan, and I'm a photographer, and I also direct commercials for a living.
Wow.
Nice.
And so I kind of ran a parallel path with motion pictures and still photography. Mm-hmm. I think I've always been fascinated with cameras as a kid. I think something about the shutter sound as early as I can remember. Like, yes. Anytime I heard a shutter fire, I just fell in love with that sound as a little kid. And I watched shows like Movie Magic, and it was like this show in the 90s that would give you like a peek behind the curtain and how productions were made. And so I got fascinated with just that whole field and industry. And so I ended up going to film school and learned on film, 16 millimeter, 35 millimeter. But one of the first classes that they make you take is a photo storyboarding class. Huh. And so it's all on film with the SLR, all mechanical. And the goal is to tell a story in still frames. So you have 36 frames per roll. But instead of, you know, burning through rolls of film, you have to come up with an idea and see if you can do the establishing shot. Close-ups, mediums, inserts, and tell that in a still frame story first before you move on to 8 millimeter, 16 millimeter, up to 35. And that was kind of the big introduction to film for me. And I completely loved it. You know, I think it was like game over for me there. I was like, okay, I have to figure out how to do this and how to do it as a, you know, as a career somehow. And then after school, I moved to LA and I was a film loader on like music videos and commercials, but I was always trying to shoot anything I could get my hands on. So I would be a cinematographer for free on like low budget projects. And, but I would also shoot lookbooks with still photography and for a lot of surf and skate companies in Orange County and just anything that could pay the bills at the time, you know? And so that was kind of how I cut my teeth in the early 2000s was, you know, doing kind of both paths of doing motion picture, live action stuff and trying to build a career there, but then also shooting still photography whenever I could.
Man. So I love to hear that the story started out like right on the cusp of where digital kind of took over for things. Because I was going to ask you, like, was that class, I was asked, like, what year are we talking? Because that class could happen today, but maybe they wouldn't have used film, which would have like changed your trajectory, I feel like.
Yeah, it was all early 2000s. So it was like 2001.
Yeah.
I went to community college for a couple of years, didn't know what I wanted to do, and then ended up finding art school. And I was like, you can do this stuff for a living?
Yeah,
like,
there's a whole building
with creative people. And it just felt like, it was like the first time that school felt like play, you know, and then the grades were secondary. Like I wasn't aiming to get like an A, but I scored really high just because the information, I felt like I was built for that stuff, like exposure, shutter speed and all that stuff. And I really just loved the idea that we started on film. And so it was right when digital, it wasn't there yet, but we had these speakers come in about this is going to be HD TV. Like everything was still standard def back then.
Yeah.
And I think if I didn't have that, if I start, everything's digital now. Like if you look at that school curriculum, the film is kind of the novelty part of it, but everything is just digital from beginning to end. You know, there might be a demo reel course or portfolio where you get like one roll of film and you get to do like one project or something like that.
But this is so much cheaper.
Yeah. And it makes sense business wise. But so yeah, it was at a time I came in like right at the tail end of when they were still doing everything on film, and every student in the motion picture and photography route had like an allotment of film as part of your tuition. You just get like these boxes and you could pool your projects together. So if there was someone who wanted to be an art department person, they get like a load of film and like you can just like collaborate on projects together, stills or motion picture. And you can, if you're the person shooting it, you would probably benefit more because you can take all the resources from everybody else.
Like, talk us through that, because we talked about people who got into photography during that like, I don't want to call it the change, but like when the industry was shifting, and a lot of times people shifted with it. And some people didn't, or like I shifted with it and then, you know, shifted back. Did you stay all film, or do you shoot digital now, or what is your life like?
Yeah. So coming out of film school, digital was definitely on the rise for still photography. Yeah. And that's what I did. Like it just made sense, especially for the e-commerce stuff, the retail brands, anything I was shooting stills for, they needed the shots right away. And digital was such a new thing that everybody was like, oh my gosh, like we can have this today.
Yeah.
And so it was like a big deal. And so I had a Nikon D700. It was like a 12 megapixel camera was my first one. And then I moved on to Canon 1DXs. And I thought, okay, these are really big and bulky, but this is kind of the where the work is going.
Right.
So in 2010, I took a trip to Asia with my girlfriend, who's now my wife. And I just remember we were going to be there for almost a month. And I didn't want to take like these giant bulky cameras.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what else I could take because every digital camera was a DSLR at the time.
Right.
And if I wanted to shoot a film camera, everything was an SLR. And so the only other, basically like the only mirrorless camera at the time that I was really like lusting for was a Leica, right? So it's like the rangefinder, it was so quiet. We were going to be on like trains and boats and just like all over. And I didn't want to carry a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I bought an M6 with a Summicron 50. And I think I paid only like $1,000 for it back then. Yeah, I got the whole kit. And I just took a bag of Portra with me and just spent the entire month shooting film. And it was some of my favorite images off of that camera just from that trip, because it was just this idea of not having decision paralysis about what to bring, what lens to bring. I still have that now, but when you only have one camera, it's just like, what can you do with it? And that was, it was an eye opener because I didn't have to like chimp at the screen, right?
Yeah.
I didn't have that. There was even no option for that. It was like, I'll just see it when we get back, you know? And so that kind of reignited the drive to want to shoot more film, you know, in the 2010s and like, and onward. And so that kind of started the journey again.
I was just thinking that too, when you said that about going on vacation. We unfortunately were looking at all the photos while we're living it. So it kind of loses that, you know, mystique and the beauty of looking back at vacation. Like it kind of bums me out a little bit of, cause I mean, I'm guilty of using my iPhone too, of taking memories, you know, all the time. Cause it's just so easy.
Yeah. I feel like if there's a screen there, you're tempted to look at it.
Exactly. I kind of wanted to touch back on your work with the, like doing the video stuff. Have you seen, just cause we've seen such a resurgence in film in the last, you know, say 5-10 years of film photography, have you seen that in motion as well, or is it not as kind of big and booming as the film, like photo aspect of it?
No, I think film just across the board is seeing a comeback, and I think
cool.
It's just one of those things where what's old is new again, you know, and so people get used to a certain look, a certain like post-processing technique, and they want something different, right? They start shooting 4:3 again, if you notice, and nothing's like widescreen. So there is a lot of film being shot super 16 millimeter, especially for music videos and commercials and narrative again. I think just in my limited experience for commercials, it comes down to budget, and it's just seems like there's there's so many steps and variables where you can't just FTP the footage to the editor that night. You know, you right. have to like wait, and there's what if there's something with the chemistry, and so there's just too much at stake for some of the projects I work on. That's not to say that you can't have two different cameras, like you shoot digital and then you have some inserts on film if it called for it. But I think a lot of people want that look again, especially if you grew up, like my niece grew up not, she's never not known what Google is. And that's so weird to me.
Yeah. It's just weird. Yeah.
She, just like my nieces and nephews can dial up any song, any piece of material, just like on demand, right? And so when they see film and it's like, what is this? They can't touch a screen. Like they're just fascinated by it. And so there's still this like magic around film that I really love, which is why I just like leaned more and more into like bigger formats. You know, I think there's just something about opening the tank and seeing a film that you can hold it, you can touch it, and there's just light reacting to like cells on a sheet of film. It's just crazy to think that you can measure that and like have faith that there will be an image that comes out.
Yeah,
absolute magic. It's magic.
Yeah,
exactly.
Man, so how did you get into the large format stuff? Yeah, I mean, your portraits are just oh man, we were looking so at your good. Work and it's just gorgeous. I mean, absolutely
thank you.
Gorgeous.
It's kind of a long-winded answer, but
hey, let it out. It's a podcast.
Okay. Yeah,
they love the stories.
Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of a long-winded answer, but I started with a Leica on a 50 mil. And so I would just go around seeing like kind of like when someone gets into a new hobby, you just want to do it all the time. Right. Uh-huh. And so I was seeing like what I could get away with. What was like a method of shooting that worked for me? Did I want to speak to people? Did I want to like be a little sneaky and just like wait for the moment? And so I found myself just going to where like people were and seeing what was working with the 50. What I found was that I felt like I was just really far away from people. And so I moved to a 35, and then I went to a 28. And then I met a photographer named Harvey Stein, who shot a book about Coney Island. Mm. And he used only a 21. And when we were talking, he was like, you shoot with a 28. And he saw some of my work, and he said, you should try a 21. Because it really, a 21, you have to be within like 3 to 5 feet of a person to make it look like they're filling the frame. Otherwise, it just looks like everything's so far away and everybody's miniature. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit like, I keep comparing it to that movie, Leon the Professional and the Assassin, where he says, when you first start, you start on a rifle from very far away. And the more professional and better you get, and the more efficient you get closer and closer. And the ultimate weapon is a knife where you're like up close
to
your target.
I love this. This is so good.
And so I just took that mentality and like, okay, I need to be on a 21 and I need to get close. And the only way to get close to somebody is like, you have to talk to them.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that is just something that just, it made me nervous, but also a lot of the commercials I work on involve interviewing people who are non-actors, athletes, and just like ordinary people doing extraordinary things, right? Like these cinematic documentary stories that you've probably seen. And so it was a way for me to keep that muscle sharp of trying to like talk to somebody on the street, because I have to talk to people all the time for work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so like when I'm not working on a commercial, what kind of social experiment can I keep doing to one, connect with people, get photos, and see if I can just like get 5 minutes with someone and see if I can learn something about them. Right.
Wow.
So it was a little selfish, but also just helped keep me sane. So I had the same routine every day. I would drop my wife off at work. We lived in San Francisco at the time. And I would walk my dog around the same loop in downtown San Francisco. And I would just see if I could just like make one or two pictures in that hour. And I just did that for years. I went from going from a wide angle to, there was just something about, okay, I like the context of what I'm seeing in the wide angle, but I want the separation of an actual like portrait. And so then I jumped up formats, right? And I started with the Mamiya 7 and I was like, okay, this is kind of going in the right direction. There's more detail. I can see more into like the areas of the frame and the aspect ratio is much larger, right? But I didn't get accurate framing because it's still a rangefinder. And then that's when I jumped up to a Pentax 672, which was kind of like, for 5 years, that was like all I shot on, just the 105.
Such a good camera. Yeah. Such a great lens. Ugh.
Yeah. It was awesome. And that's how I met people around the city. It gave me like so much joy to just like talk to someone and just connect with someone. Wow. I think we all just could use more of that.
Totally.
I agree.
I think we all really want to have a conversation, even though we're like on our phones. We're like, no, I'm kind of shy. I think ultimately if somebody was to comment on like, hey, that's a nice hat, or like, what's your dog's name? Or I noticed you were reading this book. I think like we're built for that. And so I thrived on that. Like I wasn't overconfident. Like I get nervous anytime I walk up to someone, but still I was like, there was something that was like pulling me, like a gravitational pull to these people that like, I just need to talk to someone and this person before my brain talks me out of doing it. Yep. So if I saw somebody, I would just like count 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I would just like go, like just start walking.
I like that.
Yeah. And that's what I did. And having a dog helped, but you know, it was never a, hey, can I take your picture? Like it was never that. Like that's probably the worst way you can ask for someone's photo on the street is like, hey, can I take your photo? You know, then everyone will go, like,
no.
Yeah, shields up and that's like,
what are you
going to
use it for?
Way.
What are you using it
exactly.
for?
Exactly. Everyone is so savvy with YouTube and like, what's this going to be on? Are you going to sell it? And so that's, if you can get past that and then get them to even like move from this part of the sidewalk to this part where it's brighter or the light is better, just it's cool. I encourage everybody to try it. Like I know that it freaks people out to walk up to strangers on the street, but it's addicting. Like you'll like, it's one of those things when you try, you'll say, why didn't I do this more often? I thought I was gonna get no's all the time, but most people say yes.
Nine out of ten times
they'll say yes.
Yeah, that's the crazy part. It's like 9 out of 10, they'll be like, sure.
Exactly.
Especially if you got a cool camera. The cooler the camera, the easier the yes.
That does help.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would have my camera out so they kind of know what I'm up to, you know, but I'm not trying to steal the shot. I just felt like I was at a point where I was past that. Like I wanted to have them look into the camera and make eye contact. Yeah. And so it's kind of like a common thing that you'll see in all my photos. Like there's always a person and they're usually looking at the camera.
Did you do this kind of stuff with like a large, like 4x5 or any, like anything bigger?
I did. So I it's one of those things where I was shooting on the Pentax and it was 10 frames per roll. And I started scanning at home. I just kept trying to take the process upstream as much as possible. After having kids, I was like, okay, what can I do at home when a kid is asleep? Right.
And
so I started scanning, but I was still having to go to the lab and like wait for the film to come back. And so I thought, okay, how do I develop at home? And so my friends at Gordon and Matt up in San Francisco at Glass Key Photo, they like walked me through how to develop at home. Yeah, shout out to Glass Key for like making me spend so much money and like just going broke shooting film.
Yep.
And the routine was whatever I shot for that day, I would put my daughter down for bed at night. I would process and then I would wait the 2 hours to dry and then I would scan that night. And so I'd whatever I would have shot today, I would have scanned and like ready to post the next day. And so the turnaround time was like crazy fast compared to like what things typically are where you have to wait. And lab scans, you know, they're hit or miss, right? You have more control if you can scan at home.
Man, I just think about talking about your process of talking to the person, because things like street photography where you're kind of hoping to get that moment or getting someone to look at the lens, it's so much harder. And I feel like unless you have like some of the best luck in the world catching some street, like I used to love doing what you're talking about. Like I lived in a town where there were people out all the time. It was a touristy town. So I was out having those conversations and also trying to play the game of kismet. Can I get all these things to line up and get the shot that I want? And it's always almost there. You know, you get one in a million. It's like getting struck by lightning when you're out there trying to catch it. But doing what you're talking about, you know, like actually holding the conversation, getting them interested and then getting them into the photo and stuff. It's just such a better way to go about it. It's yeah. just so much easier and nicer, and you can actually get the photo you want when you do that. So
it's also like a totally different look too. Totally. You know, I love looking at environmental street portraits.
Same here. Addicted to looking at them. Yes.
Yeah. I think it is a different way of working. You know, when I travel, obviously, like I don't interrupt the moment, and I'll just like shoot things that I like, you know, if I feel the urge to shoot. I think for me, there's just something about like walking around, and if there's somebody that you'd want to say, like, you'd want to call one of your friends, like, you can't believe what I just saw. There's this person holding, like, dude, there's this crazy outfit. Like, that's usually, it's like bells going off in my head. Like, okay, that's someone that I think might be worthy of a portrait, right? And I don't shoot a lot. Like, some people think I'm like burning through rolls of film, but I only shoot 2 frames per person.
Mm. And oh, so, because
they're usually like a full body, you know, unless I'm going for a close up, but I'll shoot one, and then I always say I shoot the next one for good luck. And so this way I can get like five portraits on a roll of 120.
Yeah.
Right. And after a while, like I just felt like I was on autopilot. Like I just felt like the Pentax, I was getting lazy. Like I just, it didn't feel as inspiring as it used to after like 5 years of doing it. And so I just felt like I wanted a new challenge, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I was like, how can I make this bokeh look crazier? And then so I got introduced to the Aero Ektar lens.
Oh, insane.
Yeah. And so I picked that up, and it was my first time doing 4x5. Mm. And it's so razor thin, the depth of field, but there's not a lot of movements. And so I'm like, what are movements?
Yeah.
And so like, you can do more than this. Like, what is it? And then, so I just like went down a rabbit hole of 4x5, and I ended up buying a Linhof Master Technica and I had shot that for 6 months. And then I made the mistake of looking at someone's 8x10 ground glass. And it just like pierced me to the bone. Like that day.
Yeah. You're like, damn it.
Thinking, I was like, okay, I don't know how, but I need to have it. Everything up until that point I could develop in the tanks I had, like everything just jumped up and scaled up tremendously, and like how to process and everything, the cost. But I just like, I had to have it. I just like, there was no way that it was like, you're looking at an 8x10 piece of glass, and that's the same size as a finished print. So you're just sitting there and you're looking at this thing that is the size of a print that you can hold. And it's like looking through this window. And so I just like, I don't know. I don't even know if I saved up. I bought a Deerdorf, like the cheapest one I could find. And I started using that as soon as possible. And so that was a couple years ago. So I've only been shooting 8x10 for about 2 years.
Wow.
But I feel like every other format for me is like kind of vanilla now. Like once I've gotten to 8x10, I feel like I can't go back, unless it's like 35mm. I shoot a lot of my family on my Leica still, so I still use the formats, but the one that I'm just always so like, I just like smiling the whole time I'm using it is I have an Arca Swiss 8x10 now.
Beautiful
It's camera. Actually Ben Horn's old camera. He sold it to me.
Oh,
no kidding.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah. So the story was in December, I was like, okay, early Christmas present, I'm gonna buy a Deerdorf 8x10. The wood cameras are so romantic, and they're like charming and they're beautiful.
It's artwork in itself.
Yeah. But they are really rickety. And so I was a little disappointed with how much wobble there is.
Okay.
And I shoot street portraits, right? So I move fast. Like I need to make my adjustments fast, and having to loosen and tighten things took some time. Right. And then I was chatting with Ben, and he's like, I'm actually selling my camera. And I'm like, oh my God, this was in January. This was a month later than when I got the Deerdorf. So literally a month later, I bought his camera. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I had to sell the Deerdorf. But the amount of control you have on the Arca, everything's geared. So I make one adjustment. I can have my hand with the loop focusing on the ground glass, and my other hand can be moving like the rise and fall and focus. And so I can be doing two things at once. And so if I'm having someone on the street and they're giving me 10 minutes, it just allows me to move faster. And the ground glass is the brightest I've ever seen. It's like looking like looking at an iPad on the back. It's so bright. Which I'm sure he's told you before too.
It's good to hear that though. You know, we always talk about, you know, people that shoot 8x10 on the show and stuff, and just knowing that camera can be rickety is that's a big kind of deal when you're, like you said, you're out there in the wild getting portraits. It's, I mean, I could see if you had plenty of setup and, you know, all that stuff, but that's good to know that it can be rickety. 'Cause I mean, like, again, you're going, just the price of a film holder for 8x10 is expensive.
Yeah, I think the cheap is like $100. Yeah, but you've been talking about, you've been wanting to get into 8x10 for a while. I feel like the episodes I've been listening to over time, you're like, I should just get into it.
I know.
Did you ever get in?
No, I'm still a 4x5. I have so much 4x5 stuff, like, you know, lenses and all the film and the holders, Polaroid stuff I have. And I don't take advantage of that. I've been really slacking on the big cameras lately. Like I'm not in an area in a situation like that where I can, you know, if I just want to load up the big camera and go out, I really got to have it planned out and something really thought. And it's so much easier because, you know, how you're working all week. I finally get out for the weekend. It's way easier to grab the Leica or one of my Nikons or a point and shoot or the Polaroid, you know, just to kind of go free my mind. Unfortunately, I haven't been doing any planned shoots. And that's what, if I was getting into doing that stuff again, I would definitely pull the trigger on that because I've always wanted to do it. Like, it's a dream of mine. I'm obsessed with it. It's beautiful. Like, it'll happen. I need the punch. The punch to get going.
I know. It is a commitment. How about you, Chris?
So I was actually, my next question was going to be, so I've dabbled in 4x5, but I'm still pretty intimidated. Do you have advice for people who are like ready to try? And you know, it's a lot of checks that you have to do, like, to make sure that it's right. And people, you know, I get worked up and I'm like, and I'm so worked up about, did I close the thing? Did I ding the thing? Blah, blah, blah. That I'm like, this isn't even a good composition. You know, like, I just did a headshot just to get like an image on some film.
Yep.
What do you have any? Give it to me.
I mean, you're on the right track. I think, I mean, there's clearly something where you want to do it, right? It's so many steps. And so when you look at it from the outside, you're like, why would I want to do that if I have a phone in my pocket, right? Sure. And so I have this like analogy or where it's kind of like, for me, how I used to make garlic bread to how I make garlic bread now. Like, when I was in college, when I made garlic bread, I used garlic powder and butter and I just stick it on toast and I would have garlic bread. That was it, right? But now, if you buy the right bread, you take the steps and the time, you mince the garlic, cut the parsley, salt and pepper, you know, you mix it all together. Everything is just, it's still garlic bread, but it's so much better. It's elevated and you took the time to put all the right ingredients and take the right steps to like have that elevated experience, right? And so that's why I like 8x10 or even 4x5 because it's essentially the same steps that you have to take, right? And if it feels daunting, I think that's how it should feel because you should feel like when you're standing in a pool and you're just about to go to the deep end and your toe is just like, you're just like about to sink underwater. You should feel like that because you feel like unsure, uncertain, everything's upside down and you're just like up is down, left is right. But the more you do it through repetition, like all that stuff, it'll become second nature, like your morning routine, flossing, brushing your teeth. It'll feel like that eventually. And then all you have to do is just worry about your movements and your composition. So I feel like the actual like logistics anybody can do, I think creatively where you use the movements and like tilts and shifts, like that's where it comes into play. And I know a lot of landscape people will use that to get things, you know, in focus from near to far. For me, I tend to do it in a much more smaller scale. So I might focus to one eye and tilt to the other. Or, if somebody's leaning forward, they'll have their forehead. And then you'll have to, you'll have to tilt to the chin. And if you have an eye in focus, you'll have to swing to the other eye. And so those things are much smaller in how I use it because you don't really see it unless I don't do it. Like if I just focus to someone's face, usually the way they're standing, their feet are a little bit ahead of them. And if I don't make any adjustments, their foot will be soft. So those are the, I'm just making these like micro adjustments. And for me, that's like the cool part because it's just, you have ultimate like control. So it feels like you're making a photo with someone, you know, like everyone needs to have buy-in to make, everyone has a role in this photo, right? Yeah. And so that, I feel like that's so cool. And just like the conversations that happen and the talking, I feel like that's so rewarding for me in the whole process.
Yeah. So this brings me to another question I wanted to ask you. Your photos of, is it Michael Richards?
Mm-hmm.
Kramer, right?
Yeah.
Stunning.
Thank
Walk me through, like, that was for New York Times, if I'm remembering?
The LA Times.
LA Times, right. Yeah. We're in LA, duh. Sorry. like, walk me through, like, a shoot where you're bringing these kind of cameras, you know, because I've done jobs, you know, smaller scale, and it's like, I got to get it in 45 minutes, and I've got a light, and I've got a depth, and I'm shooting it digital, because that's what we have.
Yep.
This is a whole different scenario, I would imagine. So, what was a shoot like? Can you walk us through like a shoot like that? Like,
yeah. So it was an editorial shoot for the Times. Michael Richards, he came out with like a book. And so it was like a feature on him. And so the Times had only asked for digital. They usually only want digital, right? There's some editors there that will push for film, but really digital is like all they ask for. So what I do is I bring the digital setup. I shoot on a Fuji GFX. So that is kind of like the main thing. But when I arrive, I will always build the Arca Swiss on sticks where we're going to shoot. And so whenever talent comes in, they will always see it. Ah. And so I'll be holding the GFX and they're always like, what is that?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, hey, like here, you know, I only had an hour with him.
Yeah.
And we were talking about photographers that have shot with him. And so I was like, hey, has anybody, he immediately saw it. And he's like, is that large format? And I said, yeah, I was hoping once we get our digital shots done, if we have a little bit of time, like I have two sheets of black and white loaded, I think it could be fun to just get a sheet or two, you know,
such
if you're willing,
idea.
You know, and the thing about large format is like, people are still curious about it, right? Like cameras are just everywhere. Everybody's so good at taking pictures now, and making an image is so easy nowadays. And so when you see an 8x10 or even a 4x5 camera, people will stop and they'll want to talk, or they'll talk about how they developed in the darkroom. All these things bubble up in memories, and there's still like magic around that format.
Yeah.
And so usually they will say yes, right? Like just, hey, we have an hour. Let's shoot for 55 and then let's just have you sit for 5, you know? And he said the last person that shot him on film was Mary Ellen Mark.
Oh, wow.
No way.
And so he's like, she shot on black and white. And so, yes, definitely. Let's do it. And so we shot for 45 minutes digital. Once we felt like we were comfortable and got everything we needed for the story, he wanted to change. I showed him some of my work. And I showed him some of the close-ups, and he's like, I want to do that. And so he went and he changed, and he's like, if you need to stay, we'll stay. And like, he's like,
cool.
I have time. And then he sat. And so that's been kind of the formula. Like I recently just shot David LaChapelle, who was like this huge photographer.
This is another shoot I wanted to talk about because what the heck?
Yeah. It was a story about like his career.
Yeah.
And I went to his studio and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, this is above my helmet. Over my head here.
Yep. Dude, his work is insane.
Go ahead.
Oh no. Yeah. I had all the things, like the way you're reacting is how I was reacting. And so his studio manager said, hey, the day before the shoot, you can come in, you can scout and see what areas you look at.
Oh,
right.
Wow.
Because I only had an hour with him too. And so I go there and he took a picture of Tupac when he was alive, and the halo that Tupac was wearing was just hanging on the wall. And then the props from the Kim Kardashian shoot and Elton John were like, he repurposes everything. And I'm just sitting there thinking like, I've seen all of these backgrounds and these murals in all of his photos. His studio used to be a Sykes studio where they shot car photography. So the Sykes, the Sykes walls go really far back.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how you can kind of create these like huge, massive kind of like photos and panoramic shots. And they're all practical. Like I think they're altered digitally, of course, but like anything that's like an explosion or smoke, like he just does everything practically in that. That was really cool to see. Wow. And so when I showed up, I was expecting, you know, like, he's one of my favorite photographers, and you're thinking, is he going to be a jerk?
Yeah.
That's the main thing. Like, don't meet your heroes.
Exactly.
Is he going to have some sort of like attitude or disagree with how I want to shoot this? And it turns out he's a great host. He's like, whatever you need, just tell me what you want. And he was walking me through his office, and there's a picture that he took of Andy Warhol he was like posing with his fingers on his chin. And he said, I was 21 when I took that picture, and I'm telling Andy Warhol, no, two fingers, put it like this, move your chin this way. He's like, literally, celebrities, everybody, high profile people, just direct them, be very specific.
Oh, wow. He's like, give me all this advice.
Yeah. And so he sat down in this chair, and I said, just get comfortable. Show me what confidence feels like. I tried to like let the talent lead the portrait most of the time. And he was like, look, just grab my hand, put it wherever you want, turn my head, tell me what you want.
Wow.
And so I did. I had, like, he gave me his time, and I said, let's move your hand here. I'm going to adjust your foot here. And he was just very gracious, and he was cool. And that was a really great experience, in that I was pleasantly surprised with how kind he was. Because he's seen everything, you know?
Imagine shooting that photography. Like, I would be nerve-wracked. Just nuts.
And so same thing. When he got there, the 8x10 was set up.
Yeah,
and
he's smart. Like,
and I was like, hey, if we have a few minutes, you know, I want to shoot that. And he's like, 8x10 black and white? He's like, yeah, can they just run the black and white shots? Maybe they can. And so we shot two shots. And the same thing yesterday. I had a shoot yesterday. It's not out yet, but it was with Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas.
Oh, damn.
Fantastic. Had the camera set up, and they had 15 minutes with them. But they gave me 20, and so they're for 5 minutes. They just sat. They sat on this backdrop, or they stood there, and I got an 8x10 shot of them too.
Wow, unbelievable! Yeah. What a great idea!
That's
Chris,
a great
you
way
start
to,
doing that I know. With your like, with your portrait stuff.
Yeah, I think that if you can just get people talking, that's the main thing. If you can get people to talk and just, because most people, when you see them on the street, they're like, they're making a beeline for somewhere. But if you can get them to stop and mirror you and like look at you, then it feels like then they're invested, you know. And so and having a big camera obviously that they're curious about also helps too.
I've gotten that even in my Hasselblad. People are like, what is that, a Hasselblad? Like, wait, like,
yeah,
I haven't seen that in years or whatever. And I'm like, well, you're here.
What's old is new again, right? Like all these cameras they're not new, you know? And so people are like, what is that? And it's just like how I don't see people that I've considered like worthy of a portrait in my mind, like remarkable. Like most people walk through their day and they're just, you know, it's a very, very kind of predictable routine. But if someone with like an interesting camera comes up to them, wants to know about them, where'd you get that jacket? Like your hair, who did that? Like, why'd you pick that color? Like just start getting them to talk. And if you can make them feel like $1 million, they'll stand for you for you know, and then they'll go and they'll tell their friends and they'll be like, someone took my photo. Can you believe that? And they'll have this conversation and maybe they'll start shooting film too. And it's just cool, man. The film community is so cool.
Couldn't agree more.
So what's the end goal with all this stuff? Or do you have any plans for this work?
Oh, like, yeah.
Are you just kind of shooting to shoot and then maybe figure it out later? Because you got some really great stuff. I just wonder what you're going to do with it.
I don't know. The short answer is just kind of like day to day. But I did notice that a lot of the medium format shots I had in San Francisco, I have hundreds of them. And so there's probably an opportunity to make some sort of book or zine that's kind of a love letter to SF, like a here and now look at people in SF from the, you know, 2015 to 2020 era.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like there is a project that I want to do, and I just don't know if it's possible. I just love the idea of combat athletes. So like there's not a lot of hand-to-hand combat sort of sports anymore, where people will train their bodies to get into a ring and go like one versus one, you know, UFC, boxing, sumo. And so something about like how the dedication and the time to like shape their body for this like one goal against another person. And can I capture that in 8x10 somehow, like whether it's like broken bones or like crooked noses, the gloves in the gym. There's just something there that I think that I'm kind of drawn to.
Yeah, put it out there. Manifest that. Come on, let's get it out there.
I think
you said it. Now you got to do it.
And so I just because I'm around a lot of those people, like I do jujitsu. And so I'm around people who have like cauliflower ear or they box or they do some sort of other sport that has to do with combat. And it just kind of always interested me, especially with someone who's fascinated with people's faces on the street, like other people with like gnarly ears.
Oh,
and like
yeah.
they've just like, I just love stories about people who have so much attention to detail, like makers, artists. And so people who use their bodies as that kind of like vehicle to like either play a sport or like go toe to toe with someone. Like, I just feel like that's so incredible. And from a story point of view, you know,
that is such a cool idea, because I there's a kung fu place right down from where I work, and I see the old timers that, you know, were into boxing and real fight, like the cauliflower ear is so interesting looking, and so is like a good old big broken nose. Like, there's nothing that it's you know, it's such a
and so I don't know, I don't have the luxury of like road tripping and like doing a study on like certain people of different towns. So I'm trying to find things that I know or that are close to me, proximity. And that's why San Francisco and LA street portraits were like kind of, you know, perfect. The lion's share of all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that, because a lot of times we'll get in our heads about like, well, I can't do this big old project because I don't, you know, I have kids or whatever. But if you take something that you can do and make it manageable, mm-hmm. you know, like even talk about like personal projects or just something to like get out and shoot. Like, I love the idea of just like, well, this is what I do on my walk. You know, we've talked to a bunch of our guests who like, I just go out on my walk and that's what I do, and grab a portrait.
Yep.
It's attainable, you know, if you just like write the goal down, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a great question though, because I am at the point where I feel like I've done the street photography, and with large format, it's so much harder to just walk around with.
Yeah.
Like, I need to be a little bit more calculated with where I sort of park the car and then try and like find someone, because it's more commitment, right? I don't have the camera with me. I'll say like, hey, do my spiel, my pitch. And if they say yes, I'll be like, okay, I have to go back. I'm going to have to build it. And then you're going to have to remain very still. And so there's less. My output has dropped tremendously, but I feel like the pictures I do get, I just feel like I'm way more happy with.
Such a big reward. Oh.
Yeah. It's like Jerry Maguire. It's another movie reference, but Jerry Maguire, he's like less clients, but more meaningful clients. And like, I shoot way less, but like the shots are more meaningful. And each one is a time machine. Like, I can remember what I was doing, what we were talking about, where I was standing, like, you know, and I think I thrive on that pressure too. Like, are all the steps done? You know, it's just like this, like, I get that adrenaline hit and I just like, I need to chase that again.
So good.
I really need to get out.
You should both do it. Yeah. You should.
I know.
Yeah. I feel like every time you speak to a large format shooter, you both are like, we should just do it. Yeah. And you will mess up. I still mess up. And so, but it reminds you that, one, to have patience, and then also to cut yourself some slack too.
True.
You know, it's like, it's okay to make mistakes. And I used to get on myself like, why did I do that? That's such a rookie mistake. And then, you know, but then it's good to sort of like have that kick sometimes, like that reminder.
It is. Yeah.
It's also good to like not get discouraged. Like, these last portraits, I was like, not stoked on. So then I was like, well, I'm just not meant for this. That's just what it means, you know? And I was like, that's not true. It's not true. And I know that, but here we are.
So that, I mean, you're touching on something that insecurities and just pushing through a lot of these issues that I have that I come up against, right? Like, would you talk to your kids the way that
Absolutely
you're talking to yourself?
Not.
Exactly. And so when my daughter is feeling nervous about her performance or theater, and I tell her that, you know, it's fine and all these nerves, and I'm like, why don't I talk to myself about this, about like that last photo I messed up, yeah. right? Like, I can always do it again, or I can find something wow. else, and just like, you just Man. Keep, yeah. Being a parent actually, like, it helped Changed me become too. A better yeah. photographer, a better communicator, right? Yep. Don't have time to waste, and right. just how to be patient. And I started developing and scanning at home after having yeah. kids. So it like, I'm not saying having a kid will help you become a better photographer, but it helped me streamline the process and actually like love it more, you know?
Yeah. Dang. Marcus, that was just, you're just like hitting all the, love it.
Yeah, I can't wait to edit this so I can go back and make notes for my little get your yeah. butt up and do something book. But I'm working
Oh man. Yeah, I guess I was kind of worried that I wouldn't know what to talk about, but I guess I had a lot to say.
I do.
That's my favorite part of this, is it's like, you know, three people that love photography, like, we're bound to come up with something to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah, it's true. It's true. And just, it's so crazy that you can get inspired from people who don't shoot portraits, like landscape people, like mm-hmm. just all food photographers. There's just so much to admire about the medium, yeah. and I just wish film prices were a little bit lower.
I talk yeah. about that every day. We'll be right back with listener question for Marcus right after this message from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. They're a ton of fun. We also try to find a former guest for these. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. Thanks. All right, guys, the part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Expired Bren, and they wanted to know, what compositional cues do you typically look for when making environmental portraits?
Oh, that's a good one.
A good one.
I think the first thing that I look at is what the natural light is doing and where it's coming from. And so I typically will turn someone so they're either backlit by the sun or a little bit more side lit. Mm-hmm. And since we're in the street, I'm always looking for lines of single point perspective. And so usually that's like the middle of a sidewalk where you can see the lines of the building kind of disappearing into the background behind them. Sometimes I will angle it in a certain way where you can feel some of that 2-point perspective go away. But I feel like lines behind the person. But the main thing is always the light and if it's flattering, right? And if it's right. not, I will ask them to move or walk with me down to another area where it looks a little bit better. Because by the time you've had a conversation with these people, mm-hmm. they want their portrait taken. They're open to it. They're giving you their time. Asking them to walk 10 more feet or 50 feet to another place to make it better is just going to make the whole photo a lot better, right? Just you're already eating into their day, you might right. as well just take the extra minute.
If we've got to do this, we've got to do it the right way.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Just make yeah. it the best possible. And they'll appreciate that, right? I think the worst thing you can do if someone's, even if you're shooting digital, you kind of like look at it, you're like, oh, well, yeah. let's just shoot it anyway. Like, how's that make them feel, right? It's like, if you got to make them feel good about what they're doing and be transparent, totally. You know, and just say like, I love the light over here. How open-minded are you about just like walking there with me? You know, it's just make it a collaboration.
Yeah, I just have to get so much better at that. I always feel so much pressure to just take the shot because I finally got the yes. And it's mm-hmm. the next thing you know, oh, yeah. I have a mailbox sticking out of the back of their yep. head or, yep. you know, yep. just yeah. the lights on their chest or not their, you yep. know, it's just
yep.
taking that extra second, man, just to make sure it's right is so important. So important.
Yeah. And you'll feel it too. There's mm-hmm. sometimes you'll look at it and you're like, this doesn't feel right, but I have the person there, so I should just shoot it. But deep down, you'll know I should yeah. just say something, totally. Right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
you have to fight against that urge, right? It's that mm-hmm. it's that comfort zone thing of like, oh, that's my toe. So I'm like, about to go underwater again. Like, do I say something? Right. You just do it before your brain talks you out of it.
Yeah. Because the regret after, like, especially like, I mean, you know, sometimes like on set, I have to go fast.
Yeah.
And because we'd only have certain amount of time.
Yeah, you do production stills. Gallery photos are so crazy.
Yeah.
And another trick I actually do is I don't try and get people to say yes. I phrase the questions to get them to say no. And so instead of saying, hey, can I talk to you? Because everyone's used to like wanting people to say yes to them.
Yeah.
So I'll say something like, am I bothering you right now? Or is now a bad time? And so they're like, no, it's not a bad time, right? And so like you reframe it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, would it bother you if I took your portrait today? It's like, would it bother? No, it wouldn't, right? Like they have to, you sort of like hook
them
a little bit more.
That's another good trick. Dropping all the gems.
Yeah. So I sort of like go for a no instead because it's like, I don't know, it just does something. I think I read it in a book.
I like that.
To like keep the conversation going. Don't get them to say yes. Try and get them to say no.
Yeah, I guess I kind of do that sometimes. I'll say, do you mind if I grab your photo real quick?
Yeah.
And then they usually will say no.
Yeah.
Because saying, or say yes, I mean, saying no to that is like way, that's like kind of crappy, you know?
Yeah,
like,
they have to do the extra calculate. They're not on autopilot to just say no to things, right?
Right.
When things come up. And so when they say no, It really means a yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
But the slowing down part of that is like, because like the regret of like, man, if I had just slowed, why did I rush so fast? Like they weren't going anywhere. Like,
yeah.
When you mess it up because you're rushing is like the worst feeling in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it.
Yeah. Especially with production stills too. It feels like everyone's watching you. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we're holding for stills.
Yeah.
Come on, we need. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good.
A lot of it is performing too. If you're nervous, just have you heard of the Batman principle?
No, I don't think so.
Oh man. So Batman is, you know, he's Bruce Wayne, right? But when he's Batman, he puts on the mask. And so if you're not feeling confident, you think, okay, what would a confident person say right now? And you put on the mask of a confident person. You're like, it's not really me, Marcus. It's me acting like I'm confident because I'm not going to see this person again. So I'm going to play this part. And you know, it's a funny thing. Like you'll just keep doing that. And you're basically just tricking your own brain to be like, what would my hero do to get this picture? I'm going to step into the role right now just to get me over there. And then things take shape. So yeah, I'm constantly trying to.
I'm Batman.
It's not easy for me. You know. So I go, Batman, like what would he do? You know? And so, yeah, otherwise it's like you will kick yourself if you don't talk to that person.
Yeah.
If you don't get the photo, you're just going to, you'll be thinking about it in the shower, breakfast the next day.
Yep.
And you know, you won't be present in what you're doing. You'll be like still at that moment. Like, why didn't I just do that? Like, what do I have to lose? Right.
Yeah. Totally. It's another reason why to make sure to carry a camera with you, especially like in LA, people have all these crazy, awesome looks, you know, like people like, saw this one guy, a gorgeous guy, but in like a black, shirtless and a black vest and like a cowboy hat, just walked by me. And I was like, wait, I don't have a camera. And like, so it's like, you got to be ready, you know? And then if you do have the camera, you got to make sure you can mask on and act on it.
Before it gets too late.
Yeah.
Because your brain in 10 seconds, it'll be like, nah, you know, maybe it wasn't that good.
Yeah, you're
good.
Like, it's fine. Yeah. Well,
but the light's not that great. You will find so many things to talk yourself out of it that, you just got to go.
This is funny, you guys, because I feel like I'm the only one who like feels these feelings on a daily basis. But to hear you talk about... That's just like, that's exactly how I feel all the time.
I love that.
It doesn't go away. But that's also the fun part, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's what
totally
like we're not different. I've just been doing it a little bit longer.
You
can get there too.
I love it. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. Great answer. Great answer. All right. I guess we gotta give you the old camera questions here.
Mm-hmm.
So part one of two is the desert island camera. It's that one camera you can't live without. What's it going to be and why?
This was a tough one. I was like agonizing
over it. It's awful.
I probably have to say the Arca, just the Arca Swiss 8x10. I'm just like so amazed by it every time I look through it that I just get lost in it. I could just like look at the ground glass forever. However, there's a part of me that thinks, okay, when I'm on this island, am I going to be hiking around with my family? Am I going to be doing this? Like, how practical are we getting? Yeah. Because I keep my Leica M7 on me almost all the time. And like, there are certain shots that you can just get that like those candids that, that I wouldn't want to replace or lose, you know, and they have just as much weight as like a portrait, but for very different personal reasons.
That's tough.
That's why I've like, could I even answer the question? It's like, I have my favorite large format. I have my favorite point shoot. I have my favorite range finder.
Can we take it's one like, for every,
I know for every situation. I mean, I'm thinking about it now. If I had to be honest, I'd probably, if I could only stay with one camera for the rest of my life, it'd probably be the Leica M7 just because it can go anywhere with me.
Can. So tiny.
Yeah. And it just, it's awesome.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Classic.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I'm right there with you.
So we've had to twist your arm, you know?
Yeah.
I know. It's a good one. So hard. Everybody has a trouble like answering that question.
I was going to ask, like, is it a black M7? Or
it is a black M7. I had a chrome M6 and then I went to black and I'm not going back to chrome.
That was the hardest decision when I was getting my M6.
What'd you get?
I got the chrome.
Yeah. I mean, I think when you first get your first M, it's got to be chrome, I think.
Yeah.
It just so iconic.
It is.
Your second and third bodies can be black. Well, don't you have, more than one, right?
I have an M4. So I was like, this could be my opportunity to switch it up. But then I was like, well, what if I don't, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. We're not going down there.
Yeah. That's how the camera companies own us, right?
Yeah. Just make it one color so there's no choice.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it. All right. Part two, the white whale. Is there anything out there that's got your interest that you're lusting after? You can't, you know, you're on the eBay, you're on the marketplace, you're looking for it.
Yeah. Fujifilm makes a rangefinder called the GF670.
Yeah.
But they make a wide version, which I can't seem to find. They make the one with the 80, but they do make one with like, I think it's like a 55 on it. I'm not sure, but it's a fixed lens. There's no bellows on it.
Oh, whoa.
And so that is me trying to like take the 21 mil on my Leica, that experience, but like on a way larger negative.
Yeah.
And so,
medium format,
On a 6x7 neg. And I just can't seem to find it, you know? So
what do they go for if you can find it? Like what?
I think they're like a few thousand dollars now. I mean, they used to be like $1,400, $1,200. But if anyone listening has a GF670 wide, please DM me on Instagram and maybe we can talk.
Fuji made some really awesome cameras. Like they really did. And I didn't realize how cool I think it's like the GS645. It's that little compact one with the lens that pops out.
Yeah.
I had one mistakenly mailed to me. It's like the craziest story. My Secret Santa was returning he had a defective Fuji camera and he was returning it to KEH, but I guess I was the last label he printed. So he sent the camera to me. Like one day I'm just sitting here and a box comes. I open it up and it's like a Fuji camera, and I'm like, I didn't buy this is,
I know,
thank you Lord. And then like later on down the line we figured out that it was his camera, but it was just the most random thing, and I was like, man, now I need one of these, like this thing's awesome.
They made some really great
many good cameras,
medium format cameras.
That's how you know you're a decent person, Timothy. You were like, you could easily have been like, what camera?
I know, check my place last.
I couldn't. Wasn't me.
I don't know. Weird.
No, I couldn't do that. Buying and selling stuff all the time, I would feel horrible doing that. Ugh. Yeah. Anything else, Chris, that you can think of?
This is great, Marcus. Thank you for all talking shop
fun.
Like, pumping us up. And I'm huge fans of your work. So thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, thank you.
Where can everybody look at all your work? What do you want to plug? Website, Instagram? Where you at?
Yeah. I'm active on Instagram. It's at yourpalmarcus, YOURPALMARCUS. Or you can go to my website, marcusubungan.com, and that has kind of like a general view of my motion work and stills work.
Man, great.
Fantastic. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, Instagram, Threads, at Timothy Makeups. There's also some old YouTube videos. I'm not going to say anything. I was going to say something about making a new video because I have one done, but I just didn't release it because I feel weird about it. But I think I have some stuff coming out soon. So easiest way to find that, go to the search bar, Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of my video stuff there. TimothyMakeups.com is my website. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
I am Chris B. Photo on all the things, YouTube, Threads, Instagram. That's basically the handle. We are Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and same for Threads too, right?
Yep. Same thing. Yep.
All right.
Cool.
Marcus, thank you. It's been a minute since we've done one of these, and this was a phenomenal welcome back for us. So thank you.
I'm vibrating.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye. All right. First off, Chris and I want to thank Marcus for coming on the show. Oh, man, do we love your work. And it was just great getting to record with you and get inspired and, you know, hear your story and just an all around great conversation. We greatly appreciate you. And, you know, thanks so much. We really can't wait to see what the future holds for all of your work. We just love it. Thanks, Marcus. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk for only $1. You can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon only develop and hang nights over there and a bunch of stuff in the archives. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Like we always say, Patreon is the best way to support the show. For all the patrons that already help support the show, guys, again, we do not know what we would do without you. Thanks so much. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Again, thanks, Marcus. And guys, we'll see you soon with an all new episode. Later.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.